This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday, the 23rd of April. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs program, The Informer. I'm your host, Dylan Joel. Tonight on the show, we speak to two of the speakers from the Difference Health Indifference Conference earlier in the month. After seeing social media explode with positivity to the diversity and intersectionality experience, we ask who and how we can build on this to create a more inclusive future. With Anzac Day in a few days, we find out about how the Anzac appeal and how the funds help raised to support veterans and servicemen and servicewomen today. And we find a simple answer to a simple question that often confuses many: how to reach out to those marginalised in our communities. Is it as simple as putting your hand out, or is there a greater way to connect?
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Earlier this month, Australia's premier conference on the health and well-being of lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, intersex, queer and sexuality, gender and bodily diverse people and communities throughout Australia took place in Sydney. It was the Health Indifference Conference. It was the 10th year of the conference, which brought together community members, community organisations, both large and small, health practitioners, researchers, academics, policymakers, advocates and others who are interested in improving the mental, physical and emotional well-being of LGBTI people. Anyone missing out on the conference couldn't help but have a serious case of FOMO watching social media, with an outpouring of information, acceptance, intersectionality and accessibility for our diverse communities. Dean Arcuri spoke to Margarita Coppolino, who spoke at the conference on intersections of cold, culturally and linguistically diverse people, disability and also LGBTIQ plus people. He also spoke to Misty Farqua, who spoke about non-binary and bisexuality topics at the conference, not only about what it's like to be in such a diverse and informative space for those marginalised voices in our communities, but we also can make this communication and accessibility better.
I did the presentation on LGBTIQA / people with disabilities, and that intersexuality tends to be left out of the conversation when we talk about LGBTIQA health. We find that disabilities tends to be an added-on after conversations are being had. So it was really refreshing to be given an opportunity at the conference to facilitate a workshop where I got people in the room to think about, well, what can they be doing to increase opportunities for LGBTIQA, people with disabilities from cold communities, to feel like that they can go to a health service provider and say, look, I've got some issues and how can you help me? I must say, I remember doing a Health Indifference Conference, would have been way back in 2000, and just to see the breadth of where it was then to where it is now as a conference and facilitating issues on the level it did, and the collective of people that were there was far different from where it was in 2000. It was really refreshing to see that it's grown, that those difficult conversations were had, but people were really saying, well, look, we know that there are issues. How can we as a sector really work on these issues to address them so they are no longer issues that we keep talking about.
The conference was incredible. I have absolutely zero complaints. Maybe it was a little bit warm sometimes in the lobby. That's about the only bad thing I can say. I was at the 2015 Health Indifference Conference, and at the time, that was the most incredible conference I had ever been to. The toilets were gender neutral. They'd asked me what my pronouns were. I'd never been asked that at a conference before. So at that time, I was really excited. And also at the 2015 conference, there was an intersex presentation and a bisexual presentation. So I kind of felt like, wow, we're doing stuff other than gay and lesbian. So that was really exciting back then. But this time, they just blew that out of the water. There was a stream that was focused on country. So we had, for the entire conference, Indigenous presentations by Indigenous people for the whole conference rather than just one or two presentations. We had a whole session on bisexuality. There was an intersex panel with 12 people on the panel, which was incredible, and a trans panel. And, you know, things like non-binary gender and culture and disability was kind of worked through the entire conference. So it didn't feel like intersectionality was tacked on. It felt like that was actually, you know, at the core of the conference. I was blown away, and I couldn't think of how they could have done it better.
The Health Indifference Conference brings together over 400 community members, community organisations, large and small, health practitioners, researchers, academics, policymakers, advocates, the government, and others who are interested in improving the mental, physical and emotional well-being of LGBTI people. Health Indifference offers a space for cross-sector collaboration, showcasing the latest in research and community knowledge, and inviting an intersectional exploration of health and well-being. Each conference expands on the one before it and considers how context and place contribute to health.
Given that there were a whole lot of minority groups presenting, I think that was fabulous. I think, you know, it needed to happen. And it was done under the community capacity streams, which was really lovely because the way it was structured, you were able to go in and out of key sessions that you wanted to. I really felt it would have been an extra day just to join the dots between the different minority groups because there were overlapping issues. And I think that's what we need to do going forward, is saying how can we work with everybody instead of making sure no marginalised groups get left behind.
I think that the Alliance is incredibly good at engaging with the community in a way that perhaps other organisations don't. They are, you know, in my view, one of the truly national organisations. They have representatives in every state. They talk to people in every state other than their representatives. They make a concerted effort to engage with those communities that maybe aren't getting as much of a voice. I know that they've been doing a lot of work with Indigenous communities, with the intersex community. So they're actually, you know, they're listening to feedback, I think, from conferences and from community members, and working based on that feedback, they're working to increase the inclusion. And I think also in terms of the crowd, because the crowd was incredible, the space was just filled with love and compassion the whole time. I think there's, you know, a lot of the people who were there work in the health and mental health spaces, and I think that actually helps with the culture of the conference.
Health Indifference is famous for offering a broad program of presentations, welcoming contributions from a wide range of themes and topics, including, but not limited to, encouraging the development and dissemination of new knowledge and research with and by members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, intersex and queer communities, facilitating the development and enhancement of networks between communities, health practitioners, service providers, consumers and policymakers, increasing awareness, knowledge and skills of participants in relation to health issues and needs of LGBTIQ+ people and populations, developing strategies of action on key issues identified by conference participants, and encouraging and facilitating as wide a range of participation as possible to encourage and foster a sense of diversity in community. I asked Margarita and Misty what they took away from the conference that wasn't part of their focus or research.
Well, so I've got a fairly good understanding of ethnic communities, just sort of the stories that were being told, and just, you know, given the way the presentation was done, some of the questions that were asked from the actual audience. That was one, and particularly around Indigenous Aboriginal issues, around lack of services for being inclusive, and just how they said, well, what are the messages we can be taking back to our community? So those were the two areas that stood out for me. And then, of course, intersex as well. It just blew my mind when some of the issues were raised and just the interventions and things that have happened. I mean, I was pretty clued and pretty educated, but it was like I went into the conference with a glass more than half empty so that I could actually grasp, you know, what people were saying. And I always say I'm never the expert. I'm surrounded by people who tell stories, really great narratives and really good experiences and best practice. So they were the areas that were really stood out for me from that conference.
What are the next steps to keep moving forward? I think about the way the intersex community has mobilised in between the conference in 2015 to now. There's so much more of a cohesive community speaking with one voice and actually getting quite a lot of notice because of that. I think it would be great if, in whatever capacity, the Alliance supported the intersex community to do that, to see that kind of support for the trans community and the bi community to help those communities mobilise at a national level, because I think that's something that I find quite difficult. I have contacts across Australia, but for us to try and mobilise across Australia when we're trying to do this work in our own local community is a bit too much for us to handle. So I think, you know, that kind of national mobilisation and support for national mobilisation for these communities is probably where we need to get to next. If I think about perhaps a standout presentation for me was one by Russ Vickery and his partner Matt that was around domestic violence, and I think it was called My Other Closet, the Cabaret. I would love to see the show. They kind of spoke about their experience of putting the show together and did a song as well, which was incredible. But I think I was interested in learning more about, you know, what is domestic violence, what is the impact of domestic violence on our communities, because that's not something that I've really looked into very much. My area is more mental health. But, you know, this is it all crosses over. So I think that's something that I learned from that conference that I hadn't really thought about before.
That was Dina Curie with Margarita Coppolino and Misty Farcour discussing this year's Health in Diversity Conference, bringing together diverse voices and research from and on our communities to improve the mental, physical and emotional well-being of LGBTI people.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
April 25th is Anzac Day, a national day of remembrance in Australia and New Zealand that broadly commemorates all Australians and New Zealanders who served and died in all wars, conflicts and peacemaking operations, and the contribution and suffering of those who have served. In the lead up to Anzac Day, people are encouraged to buy an Anzac badge, which supports Australian veterans, both young and old. DNR Curie spoke to RSL Victoria President Robert Webster about the Anzac appeal, what it means in this day and age, and the support it provides.
Anzac Day's evolved. It used to be sort of the total commemoration of what happened on the 25th of April in 1915. But I think it's now evolved to remember everybody who has served. And depending on which set of numbers you look at, the figures that I've seen suggest that nearly 2 million people have worn the uniform of the Australian Defence Force since Federation. And that's an enormous number of people. And just under 900,000 of them have served overseas. We think of all of those people, and then we think of all of those that didn't get a chance to go overseas but kept the end up here at home, doing the things that had to be done at home.
Robert Webster has been involved with the Anzac Appeal for over 30 years, whether it be as a president of his sub-branch or out in the streets selling badges. Getting out on the streets and selling badges is an important way to connect with the public about what supporting veterans means.
I suppose the interaction with the public and talking to, particularly to kids, my sub-branch is Q, will either sometimes get in the shopping centre down at Q Junction or at the tram terminus there at the top of Glenfree Road. And if you're at the tram terminus at the top of Glenfree Road, you get a lot of kids, and they're all wanting to know. And particularly since we've encouraged veterans to wear their medals, the kids will want to talk to you about your medals and those sorts of things. So it really gives you the chance to interact with people that you may not otherwise come in contact with. I've been talking to a primary school this morning, a primary school my granddaughter goes to, actually, and just the way they've embraced each class, made a wreath, different concepts and all sorts of stuff. And it was really terrific just to interact with them and talk to the kids. I think the education system, probably in the last 10 years has evolved a fair amount, and there's a lot more study of our contemporary history, not only the military history, but what was happening at home around it, how communities got on when, the majority of the men folk had left to go off to war and those sorts of things. So there's a broader spectrum of what was happening in the community while the war was happening too, and that's fairly important for people to understand. In the Second World War, a lot of people weren't able to enlist because they were in reserved occupations. A butcher, bloke who made boots, weren't allowed to join up because they had a job that was critical. The support from the community generally is very strong, and I think they reckon that we are at least spending money in the right places.
Distributed through the RSL network of 285 sub-branches, the badges for the Anzac Appeal are sold in every corner of Victoria, with local volunteers, often veterans, spending hours selling to raise funds to help current and former Defence Force personnel and their families when in need. The help provided varies dramatically, but includes direct assistance such as paying rent and medical bills and other living expenses, and providing food vouchers and home maintenance assistance, and education or re-education. Other assistance includes pensions and advocacy support for veterans.
The RSL and the broader veteran community is a six-generation community. We're still looking after some widows of First World War guys. Second World War guys are in their 90s. And then you come down Korea, Borneo, Malaya, Vietnam, etc., etc., etc. Now, each of those different generations requires different things. The World War II generation and the widows of the First World War guys, they're looking at support to stay in their homes rather than to go into aged care, for example. At various stages, all veterans are looking for support to put in claims for Department of Veterans Affairs for their benefits and those sorts of things. So our advocacy and pension officer work is quite substantial. And so down to the younger guys who are currently serving or those that are just coming out of service, we're assisting them with transition, helping them get a job when they get out of the system, and then sort of looking after them. The thing that we've noticed in the last couple of years is the number of people presenting with a range of mental illnesses that in many cases have been disguised by the veterans, because the minute they own up to one of them, if they're still in the service, they're reduced from all sorts of work activities, they're not eligible for deployment and those sorts of things. So a lot of them bottle it up or hide it, and then when they get out, it really hits them. And that's a major issue for us.
One of the ways they're trying to combat stigma and mental illness is with RSL Active.
The big thing that we're running at the moment for the younger guys and girls is what we call RSL Active, which is adaptive sports, but it's not only sports. We do things like yoga, we offer some counselling, we do some work in better parenting, those sorts of seminar sorts of stuff, including as well as the surfing, the bike riding, the archery, the you name it, in attempts to reduce isolation. Because many of these guys who, once they get a mental illness of any type, tend to clam up. They tend to become isolated. And the further they become isolated, the more depressed they get. And so getting them out, keeping them working on something that gets them going is really beneficial for them. Prince Harry and his work with the Invictus Games is a classic, and that's where this adaptive sports RSL Active sort of fits in on at the grassroots level for supporting veterans who are sort of making their way back to health.
This year's Anzac Appeal sees the launch of a special $30 badge commemorating the Battle of Villers-Bretonneux. and a $50 badge to commemorate our Anzac nurses.
Villers Bretonneux, because it's our other Anzac Day. The Battle of Villers Bretonneux was the 24th and 25th of April, 1918. And essentially, it's the start of driving the Germans back to Germany. They had made a significant advance across eastern France, but were halted by the Australians at Villers Bretonneux. The Germans rolled the Poms who came in after Australia, and then the Australians came back and took possession of the town on the morning of the 25th of April 1918. And that was the beginning of the end. That's an important centenary. Now, the link is that many of the Victorian guys that were involved in taking back Villers Bretonneux on the 24th and 25th of April had served at Gallipoli. So it was sort of a bookend, if you understand what I'm saying. Gallipoli's at one end, which was, you know, long-term slog, and Villers Bretonneux at the other end, which sort of is the beginning of the end. And I think many of them saw it that way. The nurses have supported Australians wherever they've gone in the field. From Mudros, which was the island just off the Gallipoli Peninsula, through to current-day service in Afghanistan, Iraq, and those sorts of people. So a lot of women in our services, and particularly in the medical area.
Through the Anzac Appeal, Australians continue to stand together, wearing their own badge of honour and remembering the servicemen and women who sacrificed so much for us. The community support for the Anzac Appeal is vital to allow it to continue to deliver assistance to those who have given so much protecting our way of life.
We've got a network of 285 sub-branches in metropolitan and country Victoria, and they could be anywhere. But in addition to that, Woolworths support us, and they will have Anzac badges at their checkouts. They take no commission on that. It's a straight through transaction to the RSL. And Officeworks have supplies of Anzac badges as well. So if you can't find an RSL seller anywhere, Woolies or Officeworks.
That was Dean Arcuri with RSL Victoria President Robert Webster. And be sure to buy yourself an Anzac badge.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Now on Joy, Rachel Tyler-Jones and Dean Arcuri continue their conversation with Misty Farquhar from the beginning of the show, who spoke to many different people in the communities at the Health and Difference Conference. We find out an answer to a simple question that often confuses many, how to reach out to those marginalised in our communities. Is it as simple as putting your hand out, or is there a greater way to connect?
Misty, just one more from me. What was the best question that someone asked you over the weekend?
Oh, gosh, now I'm trying to think of questions. off the top of my head, I think my favourite question was, how do I engage with bisexual people in my local community? But people were asking questions that were deeper than you would normally get, you know. So normally in the bisexual presentation section, you know, often you'll get, really basic questions, and people were engaging at a much deeper level. I can't think of any specific questions off the top of my head, but there were actually quite a lot of questions. And, here's a question. So there was questions about, you know, what is it, do we need to call older lesbians that have, been in relationships with men in the past, do we need to call them bisexual? Is it okay if they don't use that language? There were also questions about pansexuality versus bisexuality. And all of the presenters, so there was, I think, about six presenters, all of the presenters were talking to, you know, this idea that we can use whatever labels we want to, as long as we don't use labels to come up against other labels. So often, you know, pansexuality, people who are pansexual say, well, I'm pansexual because bisexuality is bad in these ways. It's just about accepting the different labels that people use.
When someone does say to you, how do I engage with bisexual people in my community, what do you say to that? Because it's kind of seems...
Well, I mean, as part of my research, I hunted down bisexual community groups and individuals across Australia. So I kind of have connections with people. I can find them people who might be able to help. And, you know, what I'd said in my presentation in the plenary session is that there are actually separate groups of bisexuals, because you know, bisexuals and non-binary people as well don't feel necessarily supported by the LGBTI community in its current form. So they're kind of finding separate community amongst themselves. So I do actually have connections across Australia for individuals and groups. So that's something that I can help with. But I feel as though, you know, these individuals and organisations could do exactly what I did and just find them. Yeah, I think you have to really want to find them.
That was Misty Farquhar with a pretty simple answer to a simple question that can sometimes be confusing to ask when reaching out to marginalised communities.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer. I'm Dylan Joel.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.